You are listening to the Loikamania Pop Culture Podcast. Is brought to you by CheapGraphicNovels.com, where you can purchase your favorite trade paperbacks and hardcovers for up to 45% off cover price.
How's it going, everyone? Pat Loika here. You're listening to Loikamania episode 54. This week is going to be a little bit different because this week, actually, no, it's not really different because we got a comic creator on to talk to us. His name is Mr. Brandon Jerwa. He is a writer. He's written books like G.I. Joe for Devil's Due way back in the day. He also wrote some stuff for Dynamite, like Battlestar Galactica. And recently he had some work with DC, particularly with the Mighty Crusaders book that came out, featuring the Red Circle characters that were licensed by DC from Archie. Why did I say Archie? What the heck is wrong with me? Before we go any further, I do want to apologize. There's some issues with some of the recording here. I don't know what was up. I think it may be my recording equipment. We had a bad connection. I mean, it sounded fine while I was talking to Brandon, and I apologize to him also because there's some parts where it feels like he cuts out. Because it sounded fine when we were recording it live, so I don't know what's going on with it. But the interview's still good. It's still salvageable. It's still listenable. Again, I apologize in advance for that. Now, the reason why I invited Brandon onto the show is because he's doing a Kickstarter campaign right now for his new documentary called Untold Tales of the Comic Industry. And it's basically him interviewing various pros, particularly in San Diego. And he's looking into doing more interviews like in other parts of the country. And he's trying to fund that through Kickstarter. There will be a link below where the show notes are, and I recommend that you check it out and maybe throw a couple bucks in there and donate and help him, make this movie a reality, because I think it's a worthwhile endeavor. I think it's cool to be able to show, the creators at being who they are and, not trying to pimp anything or not trying to sell anything. You know what I mean? So give that a look. The link will be right below. There's a trailer and there's some more information about what you can get if you donate. So yeah, give that a look. Seriously, I think you'll like it. I think it's going to be worth your while, especially if you're a big fan of comic books and comic creators in particular. So that's it for now. Next episode is going to be episode 55, of course. We're going to feature one of my favorite colorists. Actually, no, my favorite colorist right now, Mr. Dean White. And we will talk about his career and his current projects, among other things. So that's it. You guys take it easy. And remember to visit my about.me page, about.me/Pat Loika. Or you can go to twitter.com/Pat Loika and follow me there as well. And thank you for listening. Thank you for all the nice words, and I'd appreciate some iTunes reviews as well. So you guys take it easy, and I'll see you soon. We're back, and this time we're joined by comic writer and now documentary filmmaker Brandon Jerwa. Welcome to the show, Brandon.
Hello, Pat. I'd like to start by saying that it is an honor to be on the program, and thank you for inviting me. I actually, on a personal note, I had an uncle who died of leukemia. So
I think we would rather keep that secret because we don't want to lose any. but that's
fine. He's totally fine.
Oh, good. That's good to hear.
I just saw him. he says hello. Never mind.
Fantastic. I actually heard of you the first I heard of you was through comics, because you're a comic writer alongside, doing the filmmaking thing that you're doing now. And I first heard of you, of course, for G.I. Joe. And I grew up a big G.I. Joe kid, and I'm assuming you were a big G.I. Joe fan as well, because you wouldn't be going for, that comic if you weren't a fan. What got you into, doing G.I. Joe or rather comics in general?
G.I. Joe. Got me into comics. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, as you say, I was into G.I. Joe. I bought Flash was my first figure, and I bought him in 1982 at a Kmart in Manhattan, Kansas, and, like, I knew this was it. Like, this is the greatest thing that has ever happened to me since Star Wars. And I proceeded to devote my life to G.I. Joe at, you know, the age of 8. And the comic, of course, from Marvel, written by Larry Hama, that was right there on my must-have list. And we went to the bookstore or the 7-Eleven, you know, whatever. People used to buy comic books in 7-Eleven. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
It was my favorite thing. And, of course, I was already into comics when that happened. And I read plenty of other things. But, man, that G.I. Joe fix every month was just the greatest thing ever. And so in 2003, I was unemployed and living in Portland, Oregon with my wife and our son, who was 3 years old at the time. And we had moved there so my wife could take a job. I had been a morning DJ, and radio was dying. Terrestrial radio was very quickly dying. And at the time, Portland had the highest unemployment rate in the country. So I thought, here I am. I need to find a new career. I need to find a new path in life. I'm going to take a stab at something I've always wanted to do, and that's comic writing. If I'm going to try this, it's going to be this time, you know.
Yeah.
And my wife was very supportive, and I should say this was actually 2002. I made my break in 2003 because of this, but it was 2002. Devil's Due had the G.I. Joe license, and they were picking up from the Marvel continuity, so that whole story, that whole epic saga, if you will, that I grew up with as a kid was continuing with this new publisher. And I thought, you know, one thing, it's G.I. Joe. So I contacted them and I said, can I send you a script? And they very politely were like, sure. Okay. Stranger we've never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote a 2-part story featuring Chuckles, who was one of my favorite G.I. Joe characters. And I sent it off to them. I didn't even know what a comic script should look like, so I found a script format on the Dark Horse website, and I just copied that format. And so I sent it off to them, and I didn't hear anything for a while, and they wrote me and said, hey, we finally read your 2-part script, and we love it, and we'd like to buy it, and we'd like you to be in this new thing called G.I. Joe Frontline, which was an anthology series. And as we got into the meeting to discuss it on the phone, I'm on the phone with Josh Blaylock, the publisher, and he says, yeah, so I read the 2 parts. They're great. We're going to have you here for these issues. You're going to follow Dan Jolly. And now this is a 4-part story, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yep, sure is. It was only ever supposed to be 2 parts, so I went back and wrote 2 more parts. And then eventually they just turned G.I. Joe over to me, and I did my level best to just not ruin it.
I thought you had a pretty good run, actually. You, among other things, you brought back Serpentor in a way that was actually decent, because I was not a fan of that character, but you kind of made him work.
Oh, well, thanks. Actually, Josh brought back Serpentor. That was set in motion, and he brought me on to co-write his last couple of issues before I took over.
Mm-hmm.
I always had a difficult time with Serpentor as a kid. Like, it's funny what you can accept in G.I. Joe, but the guy with the DNA, you know, tweaking from different conquerors throughout history, that's too far. Like, you know, you can have the bikers with the chainsaws, and you can have Zartan, and you can have, you know, battle android troopers, but I don't know about this guy in the snake suit. You know, he's a little weird. But I came to dig Serpentor, and I thought we did, you know, something interesting with him at least.
Yeah, and you introduced a lot of new things to the story too. And I was actually sad that, you know, that the book ended, you know, the way it did. And then you moved on though, and before the series actually ended. Now, after that, you were doing some work with Dynamite on some licensed properties, and I noticed that you kind of had a pattern working on licensed books. Is it something that they just thought that you were good at, you know, working with, like, certain restrictions? Like, you know, with G.I. Joe, of course, you had to deal with Hasbro, And then with Dynamite, of course, you were dealing with, you know, the folks behind Galactica and Highlander and all that stuff.
I'm sure that that had something to do with it. You know, I contacted Dynamite because they announced they had the Galactica light, and I had just watched the sci-fi miniseries, mm-hmm. the nights that it originally aired, and I was like, oh, my God. You know, it was kind of like that G.I. Joe reaction. This is so cool. And I reached out to them, and they said, well, actually, we're kind of already working on some Galactica stuff, but would you like to pitch Highlander? And I said, yeah, absolutely. So I pitched Highlander, which put me in a collaboration with Mike Oeming, who had been talking to them about Highlander as well. So he and I co-wrote the first few issues of a 12-issue series together, and then I took the reins after that. But, yeah, you know, the funny thing about licensed properties is I think that doing G.I. Joe and having that be kind of a high-profile thing for me, I got tagged as the G.I. Joe guy for a number of years, and that's awesome. I'm always happy to be the G.I. Joe guy. I'd love to be the G.I. Joe guy again. But I did that. You know, I did Galactica and Highlander and Army of Darkness and Stargate, all these things. And for a while, I think it was a real impediment when it came to Marvel and DC and other publishers, because I'm the licensed property guy, air quotes. But at the time, I started making the case back to these editors who, and they weren't all dismissing me in this way, but I did have a couple of conversations with editors who were like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, you're kind of this, you know, licensed property guy. And I said, well, okay, but working with the restrictions of dealing with Hasbro and Universal and, you know, Panzer Davis, who own Highlander, whichever, doesn't that sort of prove that I'm trustworthy when it comes to people's properties? And mm-hmm. I keep getting hired back to do these things. Doesn't that sort of tell you that maybe I'm, you know, reliable in that way, and I take good care of whatever property I've been assigned? And really, isn't Spider-Man or Batman, aren't those licensed properties too, in the sense that I don't own them? And one editor, like, stopped dead in his tracks, and he's like, Jesus, that's a really good point. I mean, it, you know, so, and I think that stigma has largely gone away. I've never worked for Marvel. DC, obviously, I have with Mighty Crusaders and
The Shield.
And The Shield. And, of course, Eric Troutman and I have a Vertigo original graphic novel coming out in April called Shooters that we did with Steve Lieber. And that's an original thing, and it's awesome. But, yeah, I think I've finally broken out of that stigma, I hope.
Yeah. Now, with Shooters, this has been talked about for some time now. What is the main concept behind it, if you can talk about it?
You know, it's interesting. I'm allowed to talk about it to a tiny, tiny degree.
Sure.
You can go to Amazon and pre-order the book, but they haven't formally announced it yet. It's strange. Shooters is about a soldier who is in the Second Gulf War, and he is injured in combat and is sent home. And he is dealing not only with recovering from his injuries, but also a terrible, terrible case of PTSD. And he decides that he needs to get back in the fight, and he takes the route of becoming a private military contractor.
Ah, okay, interesting.
And
I'm looking forward to it. I mean, Eric Troutman, actually, he's kind of known for, you know, the espionage, you know, military stuff, and of course, your background doing G.I. Joe, you kind of have a little bit of that in you as well. So it should be a very fun, very interesting take on. I guess it's kind of like a modern war comic if you think about it.
It absolutely is a modern war comic. I do want to say for anybody who's out there, you know, G.I. Joe and, you know, Checkmate, which Eric worked on, this book is 100%, 1,000% in the real world. And it is, by a country mile, the best thing that I've ever worked on, the best thing that Eric has ever worked on, in my estimation. And to be perfectly honest, you know, Steve is one of the greatest artists we have today. And
he really is.
He he brought it to this book like you have never seen. And he lettered it as well.
Oh, wow.
He wanted to make sure that the story was flowing. There's a lot of writing in the story. It's text heavy, but it's also full of great Steve Lieber art. And so he said, look, can I do the lettering? I want this to flow as a thing. I want to make sure that it's a controlled environment for the reader. And the end result is 136 pages of just pure, honest, great work from all three of us. And I don't mean to brag or be immodest, but I read this book and forget that I had anything to do with it. It's that good.
That's awesome, man. I mean, I like the fact that you're proud of it, because I mean, if you keep, nobody's going to pay attention to your book if you keep saying it's not good or anything like that. If you're being self-deprecating about it, it's nice to see some confidence in your work. And I'm excited for it, man. I heard about this some time back. I was always curious about it because I didn't even know it was Steve Lieber that was actually illustrating the book. But this is I'm looking forward to this book. At this point, I want to jump into one of the main reasons I wanted to speak with you, and it is you're currently running a Kickstarter fundraising campaign for a documentary that you started filming. It's called Untold Tales of the Comic Industry, and I'm very intrigued by this because we've seen our share of there have been plenty of documentaries about the comics business, but for some reason this comes across as being very different. This comes across as being very special, at least in my eyes, because of the sheer number of creators you have involved in this. My first question for you is this: what inspired you to decide to do this?
Thank you, by the way, for saying that it looks special to you. It's special to me, obviously. I'm hoping that will translate the public react we've gotten since we started this Kickstarter campaign, and all of that has been very, very encouraging. So I hope it's going to take hold with people. But the inspiration for this really came from going to conventions and hanging out with other comic pros, my peers and my friends, and we have these really, really fantastic conversations when we're at dinner or drinking after a convention or whatever, where this love of comics and this honesty about what it's like to work in the comic industry, all of that honesty comes out and we share it with each other, but nobody else ever gets to hear these things. You're on a panel and you need to push the latest issue of whatever. Or if you're lucky and you are the focus of the panel, you get a little more freedom to talk. But these group discussions don't ever get brought out into the light for non-comic people, as far as I've seen. And, I'm a huge fan of Jon Favreau's Dinner for Five.
Oh yeah, that was an awesome show.
Yeah. And I thought, God, wouldn't it be great to have something like that for comics? And so my first shot at this was trying to organize an event before last year's Emerald City Comic Con, in which I was going to bring together a bunch of comic creators from different areas of the industry, and have a big opening night event to kick off Emerald City, where we would have panel discussions, open panel discussions with no agendas, like, leave pushing your issue of Spider-Man or whatever let's talk about comics and let's be real. And started to put that together, had a venue and everything, had the support of Jim DeMonacis and the rest of the Emerald City crew, who could not be cooler. And things were looking very good, and then at the last minute, the sponsoring venue couldn't make it happen, and so we were kind of sunk because we didn't have a lot of time and we had run out of options. And I have to specifically note that Matt Sturgis, my good friend Matt Sturgis, who I met while working on the Red Circle books for DC, and Adam Warrock, Eugene Ahn, our core rap superstar, they both altered their travel plans to be here in Seattle just in case this event ended up happening. knowing full well that it might not. And there were other people who were ready to do the same based on me calling them up and saying, would you do this? And so there was a show of good faith there, even from just two people, you know, who actually came just in case I managed to pull it off. And when I didn't, it was very disappointing for me, of course, and it didn't seem to bother them at all. But I walked away from that thinking, oh, how do we do this? Do we plan it for next year? What do we do? And I had been working on some film projects with a guy named Tom Nord, who is involved with the local indie film scene here in Seattle. We'd done a couple of the 40-hour film competitions where you have 48 hours to make a movie from scratch. And, you know, I brought this idea to him and said, maybe we could do it as a documentary. And he said, wait, you know, maybe we could. So we contacted Ali Mosanian, who runs a company called Arc Media. We worked with him on a project before, and said, hey, would you want to direct this? Because he's good. Excellent. And he said, yeah, you know what? I love comics. Let's do this. And we were already heading for San Diego, so we started there. And it was a very seat of our pants. I started sending out emails, and everybody told me yes, except for two people. And one person said, oh, my schedule's full up. And the other one said, I don't really like to be on film, but good luck. And we just started working on it.
Yeah, I saw the preview clip that you had in the Kickstarter page. And, you've got quite a bit of people already. Yeah, and then you did all of this just in the most recent San Diego Con about over a month ago, right?
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. And that trailer footage, like, it's not even finished footage. You know, we haven't done all the magic things to it. We haven't fixed the audio. I haven't stabilized images. We haven't color corrected. But we wanted to show people what we were doing. Because, you know, originally our plan was we were going to film in San Diego, and then we were going to hit Portland and Seattle, which, of course, you know, there are literally dozens of fairly well-known and revered indie comic creators between Portland and Seattle. So we thought we could make a movie just out of that. But as we got into the San Diego film, over 2 days we got 20 people. We were supposed to get 30, but it's San Diego and it's insane. Yeah. So we lost a few, much to our regret. What we were finding in these interviews and the things we were being given back by comic people that we were talking to, they were so inspiring and so honest and real that we decided, you know what? Okay, let's go home. Let's do a Kickstarter. And let's go to New York for a week, and let's go to LA for a week. And let's just reach out and try to hit as many people as we can. So that's why we're raising 18 grand, which in the grand scheme of things, no pun intended, is not a huge amount of money.
Now, no, not at all for a filmmaking, you know, for filmmaking and considering all the stuff you've seen on Kickstarter that gets funded, that's not too much.
It isn't. And I worry every day we're not going to meet our goal because, you know, people don't have a lot of money right now, and I totally get that. And there's a lot of things to out there. You know, to be perfectly honest with you, when my parents got divorced when I was 9, my mom and I were on our own more or less. She had custody of me, and so it was her and I, and we didn't have a lot of money. You know, we weren't dirt poor, but we certainly were getting by sometimes, and my mom worked super, super hard, two jobs sometimes, to keep us afloat. So for me, the idea of going on the internet and asking people for money was really sincerely one of the hardest decisions I've ever had to make, because it's not in my makeup to do that. And I really struggled with the idea, and I understand the necessity of doing it, and I appreciate what Kickstarter does and how things work in the age that we live in now with, you know, crowdsourcing and all of those things. But it was very hard for me to do. I don't take it lightly. And every time I see literally a $1 donation, I'm happy. I'm genuinely thrilled because it's like, hey, you trust me. We got a $1,000 donation the other day. And it wasn't even from a family member. You know?
Wow.
And it was like, oh my God. And so between all of these comic people that I know and some that I don't, like Eric Larson, he just happened to not be busy. We were walking by him and I turned around and said, hey, you want to be in the movie? And he went, well, sure. you know, those things are going to happen along the way. We're going to have some dumb luck. And Eric was great, obviously. But between the willingness of people to open their hearts to me and let me put it on film for the world to see, and then for fans and, you know, people who are in the movie and people who just love comics to donate to this and put their faith in again, that's really, really big to me. And I hope I don't sound like I'm overselling it, but it's, Pat, it's the biggest thing in the world to me. It's like, oh my God, you trust me. And it just tells, one, I'm doing the right thing, and two, that I have to stay focused on making sure that that trust is paid off with an amazing film. And I really think we have the ability to do that. So that's really kind of why I was even willing to do the Kickstarter at all. I can deliver on the promises we're making here because I have a great team and because there are great people who are participating.
Yeah, and clearly, you know, just seeing some of the stuff that people are talking about. Like if you're a backer of the project, there's a bonus clip right now that's online of Ben Temple Smith, and it's just really cool to see, you know, a creator like that. You never really hear much from Ben Temple Smith aside from, you know, his online presence on Twitter, but you don't really see him do much interviews or anything. And it's really cool to see him talking about stuff like that, like comics and his tattoos and all that stuff. It's interesting to see, like, you know, the more personal side of these creators. And I think you're really putting them in a really good light just based off of the what little we've seen so far. So I think, you know, the trust was definitely, I think you've earned their trust just by showing that off.
Well, thank you. I have to say, Ben specifically, I've only gotten to know Ben really over the last year, and I think we've become closer friends over the last few months even.
Mm-hmm.
Ben is like one of the real true sweethearts of the industry. He is a genuinely wonderful guy, and that's not to put him above anybody else in the film, because I, you know, like B. Clay Moore. Okay. I don't know. Do you know Clay?
Yeah, I know Clay.
I'd met him a couple of times. We've been friendly. We talk online and whatever. And we have Kansas, as a unifying point, he and I, mm-hmm. and getting him on film, you know, he's honest and he's great and he's super, super friendly, and I love the guy. David Gallagher. I'd never met David before. We talked online. One time I was having kind of a down day, and he just sort of emailed me out of the blue, and he's like, you know, hey, you know, it's okay. This is comics. You know, forget it, Jake. It's comics. And, like, he was great. Sterling Gates I already knew, and again, that's somebody that I've become better friends with over time. I'd never met Lucas Siegel from Newsarama, and he was on and in the film very briefly, accommodated a time crunch we were in, but I wanted to get him because I knew that, you know, he'd been deployed overseas and that comics were big to him, and he couldn't have been friendlier. So many people, everybody that we have so far is truly awesome, and since we started the Kickstarter, like... I put up a little thing on the Kickstarter page that said, if you're a creator, you know, and you're interested in being in the film, you give me a yell. Here's my email address. And oh my God, the email. If we pull this off and we can go to New York and LA, amazing people. And those emails are still coming in every day.
So how many people have committed to doing this via email already?
If I get everyone that is committed between Portland and Seattle, and, you know, I know a lot of people here, obviously, but between Portland, Seattle, and New York and L.A., if we film every person who has committed, it is absolutely accurate to say that we have another 40 people lined up.
Wow.
And you know most of them by name. Mm-hmm. I was shocked. And I have a feeling it will better. You know, once we have the ability to say, yes, we're coming to New York and yes, we're coming to LA, that's going to be the new push. It's going to be, hey, we're coming and we want to interview you. And I have a feeling that's going to open up a lot of things. The other wonderful thing has been the word of mouth within the industry. You know, even simple things like retweeting and sharing links are great, but people are standing up to endorse this thing, whether I've filmed them or not. And that goes back to that, you know, that faith thing. And I've had a lot of people on this list of folks who I have filmed and who I haven't filmed who say, once you're ready to go again, let me know, and I'm going to send you to these 10 people. And I'm going to send you to these 10 people. And that's just, it's the best thing. And we have we could almost make two movies with all the people we have.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what the runtime for this thing would be. You could actually turn this into a TV series, almost like a full-on series with all those people you mentioned.
That would be so great, yeah. So great.
And I mean, of course, everyone's telling their the documentary, of course, is all these creators telling their creators fans or whatever, you know, telling their stories. Like at the end of it all, like, what's the overall goal for this once it's completed? Like, do you plan to take it to festivals or try and get it released somewhere aside from DVD, or what's the overall plan?
We are pursuing this as a feature documentary. You know, we're shooting for at least a 90-minute runtime. Mm-hmm. We have already started conversations with distributors, and they have been pretty encouraged. Conversations. Mm-hmm. There's nothing I can comment on, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend that we have a deal in place, because we don't. Mm-hmm. But we've had some excellent conversations that would, if they materialize, allow us to show this documentary to a much larger audience. That being said, as much as we are taking that approach, we also want to make sure that we're staying true to the sort of grassroots nature of it. We're really hoping to be done in time for convention season next year, because I want this film, I want it showing at conventions, and I want to put it into film festivals, and I want to talk to local comic stores about sponsoring screenings in theaters, because I think that this film is ultimately not limited to being for comic fans. My intent here is to get this out to the world and let the world see how awesome these people in the comic industry are. And you know, of course you have that hope that maybe if they see us in our natural habitat and they understand that we're just people and we have amazing stories like they have amazing stories and we're real and genuine, well, maybe they'll pick up a comic book. I don't know if that's going to happen. It would be great. All I know is that, you know, the people that I spend my time with and that I've gotten to know in the comic industry are some of the best, coolest people I've ever met in my life. And I want the world to see that, because they never get to. One other thing, and this is kind of new news. I had hinted at it before we started filming, but honestly, I don't think that anybody had any real grasp of what I was doing. I said, oh, I'm going to make a documentary. And everybody went, oh, okay, that's mm-hmm. cool. I'm going to Algeria in October. I went last year. I'd been asked by the U.S. State Department and the Algerian culture minister to go to the FIBDA Festival, which is FIBDA. And it's a comic book convention, essentially, but it's in Algeria, and it is focused far more on European, African, non-American comics, really. There are people there from all over the world, and they treat it much in the way that the Europeans treat comic festivals. There are tents, and there are, you know, I had a gallery wall of my work rather than just, you know, comic books lying around. And so I represented the United States last year at that festival, and it was one of the most significant experiences of my life, period, ever. But I'm returning to the festival again this year, and I am taking a short cut of the film with me.
Oh, cool.
And they're going to screen it at the festival for an international audience. Now, I haven't worked out the final details, but they are in motion, and I am hoping to have an Algerian camera crew while I'm there film interviews with international comic creators as well, asking them pretty much the same questions that I'm asking the people that were filming in America, because I have a feeling, well, and I'm not a feeling, I know because I've been there and talked to these people, that their stories are not dissimilar to ours. They grew up in different environments. You know, you have people who come from places where war is a reality, and socio-political life is different, maybe in the wake of a war or just due to a completely different cultural climate. But at the end of the day, they love comics, and their comics aren't like our comics necessarily, but there's that same love and inspiration. And if I can work it out to film while I'm there, then I'm going to. But at the very least, I will be, you know, showing the American comic industry
to
this audience. Yeah, to Algeria, to the French, to the Belgians, to the Swiss. There's a huge, huge range of international fans and creators there. So I am definitely doing that aspect of it and showing off who we are and what we do to them. So that's wonderful.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, in the same way, I mean, you're showing, you know, you're going to show them how it is here. It'd be cool if you are able to shoot and we can see how they look at comics over there. I think it may be eye opening to people out here as well, you know?
Yeah. I'm really hoping that the filming there works out. If it doesn't, you know, we still have a movie, obviously, but it would be fantastic to capture that experience as well. Because, you know, one thing I learned while I was over in Algeria is at the end of the day, even though I don't share the same religion or the same political views or even the same language as these other people, we are able to communicate because we have the very simplest of touchstones. We have food, and we have music, and we have comics. And that's enough sometimes to get you through. And it was certainly enough while I was there. And, I mean, come on. We're talking comics in a strange country. Where we have very few cultural things in common, and it's getting us by, and that's amazing to me.
Oh yeah, and it kind of also puts things in perspective, just the way you talked about, you know, you've been there before, and they look at comics, they revere comics in a certain way, and it kind of, you know, reminds you sometimes us readers here over in the States are, you know, we kind of take comic books for granted, you know, and sometimes we fail to appreciate that there's just so much great material out there, and people spend so much time just complaining and whining about certain books, and instead of just trying some new stuff that they might like. So it's great that, you know, you're able to kind of show perspective of comics from people, you know, from other places. And as far as the scheduling and getting all these creators involved, it kind of seems like a logistical nightmare, but somehow you pulled it off. Was there a person in any of the interviews you've done so far that really shocked you that they actually, you know, got to do it? I mean, you mentioned Larson was a chance encounter, but was there any other person that you approached beforehand that you were just shocked that they decided they would do it?
Not really. I mean, you always, you know, you ask your friends, of course, and then you reach out to people that you sort of know or whatever. There are people coming up that we have ready and committed and willing to go that definitely surprised me. And I don't mean to play coy and be like, oh, I'm not going to name them. But until we get them on film, you know.
Yeah, you can't really say anything until it's done. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And that's out of respect for them, because for some reason, you know, they don't end up in the film. And I've already said, oh, they committed to it. And that might create a question in someone's mind. Like, oh, why weren't they in the film? You know? So I really, again, it comes down to that willingness to be honest with a camera on you. Like, that's a big thing. And people in the film thus far have been very, very honest and forthright. And it's getting documented for all time. So I'm constantly surprised. And maybe I shouldn't be. But, yeah, it just – everyone. I'm just so happy that anyone agreed to do it and to have as many people come aboard and just go, yeah, hey, no problem, without reservation. It's extremely rewarding.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And it's also kind of humbling, too. I mean, thinking about it, I mean, whenever I try to get people on the show, on the podcast, it's always humbling when people agree to it. And then I imagine you have a bigger endeavor going on with that, with the filmmaking. That's got to be, you know, I bet you're constantly floored when you start receiving all these emails and when you start filming and you just realize, wow, I can't believe I'm actually doing this. I can't believe I'm talking to this person on camera. So, yeah, congratulations on that. And aside from, of course, you know, the documentary, do you have any, and of course the graphic novel you announced earlier, you mentioned earlier, do you have any other plans as far as, you know, comics, or do you have like an idea for what you could do next once you finish this documentary?
Well, it's funny. I comic wise, you know, I've got a little bit going on, but maybe that's the real core irony is here I am making this movie about comics when, you know, I don't have a regular gig. Hackslash Eva, which is a crossover with Tim Seeley's Hackslash, Eva, Daughter of the Dragon, which is a Dynamite creation that I've worked with before. That crossover miniseries is still going. Issue 3 just came out, and there's one more issue. I'm doing a fill-in issue on Eric Troutman's Vampirella series, issue 11. Just jumping in and doing a little one-off and jumping out. And you know, there are a couple things I think maybe coming up. I've had conversations. I genuinely, as of this moment, have no clue what my next gig is. I'm lucky enough that there's usually something. I don't wait too long. It's been a long time since I've had a regular series. I would like to have a regular series again. The landscape a little bit because, again, just immensely proud of it, and I feel it's great work and very different from anything I've ever done before. So that might proving grounds to some people who haven't locked into my work yet. As far as the documentary goes and what's next, I love making films. I really truly love it. I never in a million years would have conceived of being a documentary filmmaker. I love documentaries. I think they're awesome, but I never saw myself being that person. And now all I can think is, God, it would be great if this movie defied all logic and made $10 million so I could make another documentary about something. I don't even know what it would be, but I really like making documentaries, and I get that now. And so I definitely want to continue. I'd love to, like, write or direct an actual movie. But I'm kind of into the documentary thing right now, and I would like to continue on with that. But we have to get through this first, of course. And we will. Then we have to do a lot of work once it's done. You know, that's almost when the real work starts, is once it's done. You have to get out there and make sure people see it and find someone to buy it and spread the word in that way. So I imagine my future is going to be busy with a lot of hard work that hopefully will...
That's always good, though.
Yeah, but I'll never leave comics. You know, they'll never be the press release where Brandon Jurwa, you know, sticks his head up his own high... and it becomes documentary filmmaker, leaves comics behind forever. That will never happen. Comics, you will have to throw me out. And you might eventually anyway. But, yeah, I'm not leaving anytime soon.
And to kind of close out the interview, my final question for you is this. You've done quite a few conventions in your time, and you've done, of course, you just went to, you were just in San Diego. What is your funniest or your best convention story that you could share?
Oh, what is the rating on this show, Pat?
anything. We do explicit if we need to.
Okay. Okay, you know what? That's fine. might want to take the kids out of the room, folks. So, have you ever been to Dragon Con, Pat?
No, I'm going for the first time, actually. By the time this comes out, actually, I'm probably right there.
Oh, wow. Okay. well, good luck. I've been to Dragon Con a couple of times, and Dragon Con in Atlanta, for those of you who don't know, is not like any other comic convention. It is a party, and it is a nonstop party. It's spread over three hotels, or at least it was when I was there. There are three hotels, literally, boom, 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 on the corner of each street for three blocks. And at night, the thing turns into, like, you know, Caligula Thunderdome. It's unbelievable. You go and you drink, and there's like one hotel where you do all your drinking, and like they had a Jägermeister Slurpee machine. You know, it's unreal, and everybody's in costumes, and it's just so totally different from anything else. But my wife and I were there. This would have been like 2006, and she was taking a different flight than I was, so she was leaving earlier. And she had to leave at some god-awful time. Like, she had to be in the taxi at 4:30 in the morning. And it's Sunday. Sunday, folks, before I tell this story. Keep that in mind. It should be winding down. So we're staying in, I believe we're staying in the Hyatt. We go down to the lobby. I go to walk my wife to her cab. It's 4:30 in the morning. Lobby is generally quiet. There are a few people, you know, around. And we're walking across the lobby. I kiss my wife goodbye. She gets in the cab. And I turn around and I'm walking back across the lobby. And they have these glass elevators. They're very beautiful. I think they've been in movies before. They've had film scenes in them. And I look up, hear this sort of vague noise, like clicking on glass. And I look up, and my hand to God, this is a true story, in one of the glass elevators, there are two stormtroopers, full gear, one male, one female, full gear from the waist up. From the waist down, well, they were really enjoying themselves to the maximum effect. elevator. Helmets on. This is the very key. And again, I can look up. It's a glass elevator. I can see everything. And I was shocked and scandalized. So I only watched for like 10 minutes. And then I got in the elevator and went back to my room. That was probably it. I have 1,000 stories like that. Most of them are from Dragon Con. Pat, I really expect a full report when you get back, sir, because this is a life-changing experience. And I will
be live-tweeting.
Please do. That would be the best thing ever. You do have a good attorney, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just saying.
Am I going to need one at the end of this?
It's just best to go in knowing that you have a lot of options to deal with whatever situation may arise. That's all I'm saying. That's all.
Fantastic, sir.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Of course, I'll be linking to the Kickstarter page on the show notes for this episode. Aside from that, where can people find you online, Brandon?
Well, I'm on Facebook. If you find a fan page for me, it's because I can't shut the damn thing down. I don't believe in having a fan page. You know, you're my fan, you're my friend. So friend me on Facebook. Behave yourself. I'm on Twitter, at Jerwa. That's at J-E-R-W-A. And we, of course, have a website. It's comicdocumentary.com. There is a Facebook Untold Tales of the Comic Industry page. And, of course, you know, the Kickstarter that you mentioned. I want to thank you, Pat. You came to me and asked if I wanted to come on the show. I greatly appreciate that. You know, the support has been awesome, and it's things like this that will help us get through the fundraising portion and get back onto the filmmaking portion. So really sincerely, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome, man. I love what you're doing. And of course, I've been a fan of your work. Especially one of my favorite comics that you've done was the Snake Eyes Declassified thing. I don't know if you still remember doing that, but that was a good little mini series that you did. Yeah, but well, it's been a while since you've done the Joe stuff, though. So I kind of want to bring that up again. Thank you for that book. And again, I'm looking forward to seeing what you do next with the documentary. And good luck with the Kickstarter thing, man. I'll do my best to spread the word. I retweeted you a few times, and of course we'll be passing this podcast around. We have pretty good listenership, and hopefully they'll check it out as well.
And you donated, so thanks for that, man.
Well, yeah, of course. Well, like I said, I want to see this come out. And, you got to do, if you want something bad, you have to do something. And so I put whatever I could in for that.
Sure. Well, I appreciate it. I really do.
Okay. Well, once again, Brandon, thank you for your time. And, of course, I'll see you online. And you guys take it easy.
All right.
All right.
Bye-bye. Okay.
A goddamn shame what's going down. How it got to this, I do not know. There's a sick, sick wind that is blowing round, and the captain's got to go. About you or me, he does not give a damn. What a low down dirty snake, with his mind on his money and his money on his mind. Well, something's got to break. Like when the hounds start howling. Mutiny on this ship. Well, the captain's been drinking below the deck, and this vessel's headed way off course. I want to wrap my hands around his crooked neck and throw him overboard. Send him to his me. No, I don't want to be safe. Oh, I just want to be free and take back what these old devils have taken from me. Like when the hounds start howling.
When the hounds start howling.
Oh, when there's fiends about.
When there's fiends about.
Oh, I will stand up and shout. I declare mutiny on this ship. I said, I declare mutiny on this ship. Well, the captain's been drinking below.